Good morning. My name's John Butler. I'm the chair of this committee, the Research and Innovation Legal and Legislative Affairs Committee. And we begin by calling this committee to order and asking Kathy Craddock, our recording secretary, to take the roll.
Trustee Dennis Barsima.
Here.
Trustee Robert Boy. Trustee Wheeler Coleman.
Here.
Trustee Giuseppe LaGioia.
Here.
Trustee Timothy Smothers.
Here.
Trustee Eric Wasowitz.
Here.
Committee Chair John Butler.
Here.
Thank you.
So for those of you who have not been to a Board of Trustees meeting before, we have to go through some technical moves before we get to the point where we're going to listen to some public comment. So if you'll all be patient as we move through that. The first thing we do after roll call is we verify that we have a quorum and that appropriate notification of the meeting has taken place. And I ask that question to our general counsel and parliamentarian, Greg Brady.
Mr. Committee Chair, we have reached quorum for this committee meeting, and the university has provided appropriate notices for this meeting to proceed.
The next thing we do is we approve the agenda of the meeting, and that is before the members of the committee. So I ask, is there a motion to approve the agenda?
So be it.
There's a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
Is there any discussion about the agenda? Seeing none, all those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposition? Seeing none, the meeting agenda is approved. The next thing we do is review and approve the minutes of our last meeting, which was November 16th, 2017. Those minutes are before the committee members. Do I have a motion to approve those minutes?
So moved.
There's a motion and there's a second. Is there any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposition? The minutes are thus approved. Now in the agenda is an opportunity for me to make some comments. And the only thing I would say is that, so 26 years ago, I came to my first Board of Trustees meeting as the student regent at the time, because it was called the Board of Regents. And it was an exciting time for me. I'm not sure this will be as exciting for some of you who are new to this meeting, but I hope that in the process of being part of this committee session, you derive an appreciation for the hard work of the leadership of the university and the Board of Trustees. We're going to listen intently to what's being said to us today and throughout the day, and we're going to be taking that in. We will not, we do not typically comment very much about those public comments. We may ask questions, we may not. That is not an indication of our level of interest and concern for the issues that are brought before us. We do a lot of processing. We do a lot of consulting with the leadership of the institution after we hear from people who make public comments. So all of it's welcome. You're welcome here. I'm glad to see all of you. This is the most students we've had in the room in a long time, which is a good thing. I would only say, in terms of public comment, we're going to hear a presentation later in the meeting on the university strategy for enhancing research and innovation. And I was struck particularly by Dr. Blasey's PowerPoint presentation, which I reviewed before today. And I would ask that the committee members really focus on the relationship that he draws in that presentation between research productivity, the purpose of this committee, and important issues of recruitment and retention that cut across all the activities of all the board's committees and the board activities itself. There's some stunning data presented here, including, not to steal your thunder, but maybe we can have a little more thunder on these data points. One out of 18 factors is a interesting data. So when freshmen are surveyed for what's important to them in their selection of a university, they choose the academic reputation of the institution as the most important factor out of 18, which I think is really significant. In terms of retention, it's difficult to determine the relationship between research and scholarly activity and retention, but we do have some interesting numbers. For example, undergraduate students who are engaged in the collaborative research effort with faculty, what we call research rookies, it's a formal process, they work with the faculty on a research project, their retention rate is 99% as compared to the overall freshman year-to-year retention rate of 73%. That's a really significant data point, I think. And Dr. Blasey will share other points. But those are the things that I really want us to focus on here, because this is such an integral part of what makes the university work and what makes it successful, is the subject of this committee. So that concludes my remarks. I want to move, if we can, to the comments of our faculty advisory committee members. And I believe we have Kendall Thu here and Kathy Doderline. Barb, you're still here, right? Good. So at whatever order you wish to speak, if you wish to speak, please do.
Good morning. I'm Kendall Thu from the Department of Anthropology. I just want to steal a little bit more of Jerry's thunder here this morning and point out the continued faculty productivity that we're seeing during a period of time when the university and the state has faced so many challenges. So I want to just share kudos with my colleagues for their perseverance and their continued productivity and their continued mentoring of so many students. Thank you.
We don't have any further comment.
We as in you and Ms. Doderline.
I have no thunder to steal.
No thunder to steal. Okay. Thank you. So now is the time then for me to invite to speak to the committee. I have three requests that have been handed to me by our general counsel, Mr. Brady. The first speaker, who I will ask to come to the podium so that her remarks can be recorded, is Kristen Foley. Now, as Kristen approaches the podium, there's Kristen, our general practice is to provide for 5 minutes for public comment, and so I'm going to do that. I'm not going to strictly enforce that, but I may let you know when we reach that point.
Okay, I've been practicing, so I think I'm down to 5 minutes, but can I adjust this a little bit so I can face you a little more?
I don't know if you'll be able to. It may be, I'm wrong.
How's that?
Either you're very strong,
yes,
or that's not fastened very securely to the ground.
My name's Kristen Foley. I'm the mom of a freshman at NIU. I could easily be the mom of any of these students here today who represent Greek life at NIU. Could you raise your hand if you represent Greek life? My son volunteered me to be an advisor for his fraternity's student conduct hearing for social policy violations because I'm an attorney by profession. Let me tell you up front, the violations had absolutely nothing to do with hazing, binge drinking, or anyone getting hurt. I witnessed the student conduct hearing process myself, and I strongly believe that the investigation and the hearing did not comport with due process and violated your own student code of conduct. But the problems with student conduct really transcend my son's fraternity. I speak on behalf of many Greek life students who are here to show their support, but fear retaliation if they speak out. Many are anxious and worried about where they're going to live next year or whether they should transfer to a different school. I'm hopeful that my words will spark a change between the administration and the Greek community about issues affecting Greek life, including placement on a watch list, monitoring social media, and unjust investigations and hearings in the Office of Student Conduct. I wouldn't have taken a day off work to drive to beautiful overcast DeKalb if I didn't feel strongly about these issues. You have, or will no doubt hear from your administrators, that Greeks aren't living up to the national values. The values established by their national organizations. And I believe that's a fair conversation to have with these organizations. But truth be told, the same conversation about values needs to be had with your administrators and staff members. Are your actions toward Greek organizations reflective of NIU's values? If NIU values a climate of respect for the intrinsic dignity of each individual, then student conduct investigations shouldn't turn into demeaning and coercive police-like interrogations of freshman girls, where 14 sorority members filed written complaints about the nature of their interrogation by student conduct. And they said, and I quote, "They just wanted me to confess to it even though it didn't happen. They laughed in my face. They called me a liar and told me to rethink my major." If NIU values programs that prepare students to be lifelong learners and productive, socially conscious citizens, then NIU should respect the First Amendment rights of students to free speech and to freely associate with organizations of their choice and not tell fraternity executive board members that continued activism criticizing administrators may lead to a suspension of Greek life on campus. If NIU values student success through academic and co-curricular programming and activities, then belonging to a Greek student organization shouldn't require mandatory placement on a secret watch list for troubled students, the secret monitoring of social media, including Instagram and Snapchat, surreptitious patrolling of Greek Row at night, and even taking pictures of students in bathrooms and fraternity houses. If NIU values shared governance that incorporates input from faculty, staff, and students in decision and policy making, then the one-sided student conduct controlled hearing process must be changed to incorporate measures of fundamental fairness for students. Imagine for a moment that student conduct is like a police department. How would you feel if the police could investigate, bring charges, prosecute the case, decide whether you get a judge or jury, pick the judge, train the judge, hold the hearing in the police department, and handle the appeal? Do you think that's a fair process? Because I don't. Oh, and by the way, student conduct gets to predetermines the penalty prior to the hearing and has incorrectly calculated the penalty to the detriment of three specific student organizations three times. When I wear my mom hat, I'm concerned about the response when I've spoken or emailed administrators from the university. There is an immediate, "We did nothing wrong," or "Stop complaining," instead of saying, "We understand your concerns. Maybe we can do better." When I wear my lawyer hat, I'm concerned that the behavior of student conduct without oversight can lead to liability. NIU was sued in November of 2017 by a past member of a fraternity. One of the allegations in this complaint is that it was an unfair student conduct investigation. The very next month, he also alleged that his due process rights were violated. The very next month, I raised similar concerns to the university about student conduct violating due process rights. I am waving the red flag of possible liability, and no one is listening. My son told me last week he's considering transferring to a different school, and I am beyond disappointed at that. But I will support whatever decision he makes. In this competitive college market, you cannot afford to lose students. In closing, I am all for holding students accountable for the rules and the values of their organization, but that accountability must be established on both sides of the equation, and the hearing process to hold those accountable must be fair and equitable. If you have any other concerns about this, the organization that I assisted wrote a 29-page appeal documenting all of the problems we saw in the process. I would be more than happy to send that to anyone. Thank you.
Thank you. Do any members of the committee have any questions for the speaker? Okay, thank you. I'll ask Dr. Freeman at the end of all the public comment if there's any member of the staff or that wishes to make any comment in relation to anything we hear today. But for now, let me move, if I can, to our next speaker, who is David Jacobson, I believe Alderman David Jacobson from the City Council of DeKalb.
Hello, all, and good morning. As mentioned by Chair Butler, I am the First Ward Alderman of the City of DeKalb. I come in today wearing multiple hats, obviously wearing my Greek letters on my chest in a show of support to the Greek system. Being both a city official and an advisor to a local fraternity, I have seen the distinct change in how things are done and operated in DeKalb and at NIU over the last several years of my participation. Obviously, I don't need to tell you that the neighborhood is changing. We are seeing an influx of families and low-income individuals into the Greek Row neighborhood, which is certainly destabilizing the neighborhood and creating an environment that obviously the university has concerns about and we in the city have concerns about. I'm often asked when I started to see the change, when this change started to occur. And I look back and look back over the years and say, what was the turning point? And in going back, again, in my involvement of the fraternity, the turning point changed when Greeks were viewed differently by the university. While I appreciate a parent's perspective and agree with nearly everything that was spoken in the speaker before me, I think it's important to remember that we are all fighting the same battle in this neighborhood. We are fighting a battle to keep our students safe. We're fighting a battle to keep our students comfortable and wanting to occupy the neighborhood. And we also fight the battle on the Greek side of providing the social element that so many students on our local city surveys say their biggest concern with NIU and DeKalb is that there is no social outlet for them. There is no nightlife. There is nowhere for them to go. There is nothing for them to do. And consistently, that's what we keep hearing as a city as to why students don't want to come here and or stay here, which affects all of us. My fear, or my perspective of going through the Greek conduct process, and as an advisor, I've done it probably half a dozen times over the years with either individuals or the organization or organizations involved in the process, is very much as the last speaker said. While the old antidote is judge, jury, and executioner, our process not only has the judge, jury, executioner, legislator, investigator, police officer, interrogator, and everything else all wrapped up into one package. The problem in going in and looking for accountability is that there's a problem with fairness and honesty and trust. And those are the foundations of any accountability process within any organization. To go in and have administrators outright and flat out say that joining a fraternity thus gives up your constitutional rights. And I've had that quoted by an administrator in that department in terms of some of these cases, that when you join an organization, there is a different perspective of set of rules. When you join an organization, you give up your right to have the ability to live in your private off-campus housing freely and fairly without being attacked or intruded upon. When you lose your freedom of speech rights, when you lose your freedom of assembly rights, these are constitutional rights that make up the foundation of what we believe in this country. And for administrators to blanketly ignore those rights and in their descriptions say that those rights are no longer valid for you in their office because you are a member of any organization is outrageous to me, unfortunately. I've often joked to other people in the advising world that if any other group was subject to the focus and scrutiny Greeks get, whether it was based on age or race or religion or any other protected class, that the university would be dead to rights in a lawsuit. It's a scary situation, and it's my goal today to come in and not only say, yes, this is going on. Yes, the administrators have been aware. I have personally lodged complaints over the years that have been ignored and brushed to the side and told not to worry about them. The goal is to make change. Accountability is important. These Greek organizations need to live up to their Greek organizations' ideals and to what their letters mean. I've served as an undergrad, as an undergraduate officer, as a advisor locally, as a housing corps rep locally, as a national board member of my fraternity. The ideals matter. The accountability matters. But this should be educational. These are 18 to 22-year-old kids in most cases. The goal is to educate them. The goal is to show them what they're doing wrong and ask them and ensure that they do better, not necessarily to investigate them and punish them and throw them off campus where they can't be rehabilitated. I hope in coming to this group, you see the Greek outpouring. You see the adults in the room that are here that are involved in the Greek system, whether they're parents or advisors or staff members, and that the university agrees to come to the table to make this system fair and honest and truthful and transparent so that we can all move forward down that educative path to change the system for good and not continue to blight both the Greek community and the neighborhood I serve. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Alderman Jacobson. Are there any questions from the committee to the speaker? Seeing none, then we'll move to our third speaker, Michael Shackle. Mr. Shackle, welcome.
Good morning. As a school board president, I want to know how I get my picture on the wall as well. I am a school board president of actually one of the top 35 high schools in this state. While I was going to speak much about the same things that the two previous speakers talked about, I'm throwing that out, and I'm going to talk from the heart. I'm going to talk as a parent and as a alumnus of this university. Two-time graduate of this university. And let me tie myself even closer to you guys. I was a two-time board member of the Alumni Association when we voted the money, the support, and the lobbyists to hire you as a board of trustees and get out of the region system. Season ticket holder, I bring students here. Me too, on Valentine's Day, it doesn't mean the same thing to me anymore. It's a day of sadness for me every year. That's my concern. I have two students here, both of them in Greek life. One is a junior and one is a freshman. And I speak for all alumni, I think that, let me actually take it back and make it even a little bit more personal. My high school, Lamont High School, one of the top high schools in the state, as I have talked about. Many of the teachers and the guidance counselors are NIU grads. Do you want to know how many of those kids come to NIU? Not very many. Why? Why? There's a lot of problems here. And I don't mean academic program problems. I mean perception problems. Not necessarily the fault of the university. There's problems with the state, but there's a lot of PR problems in this university. There are. And it would be reckless for us not to ignore that. And I can tell you, I hear it from the alumni in this university as well. The kids that you are trying to recruit, the kids with some academic excellence, I know we're trying to be a university for all kids, and I get that, and I think that's very important, are not coming to this university. They're going other places. And this further issue, my concern here is with what's happening with Greek life is there's that other part, and you guys talked about that earlier, of the experience of the kids here. He talked about the social outlets. A big part of the university experience in many universities is Greek life. My student is a junior at ASA. They got a 3-year suspension. She's going to be a senior and she'll be out the door soon. My son is a freshman. It breaks my heart when a kid that's been coming here since he's been 2 years old, never wanted to go anywhere else but NIU, is now part of another fraternity that's being, you know, hard hit with sanctions. And I'm all about accountability and I'm all about law and order. But we need to think about a couple different things here. One, we need to think about the overall experience of the university and what kids are looking for here. That's a death knell to that fraternity. That fraternity is not going to recover from that. Now, while they should be held accountable, and we should have standards that they be held to, we need to figure out another way in which to accomplish that mission. We need to be very supportive of Greek life because that's a lot of the reasons why these kids come to universities. My son, who's a freshman here, who's been coming here for 2 years, since he's been 2 years old, coming to football games, has heard nothing about, other than NIU, his entire life from his father and his aunts, who also went here, and his father and his aunt's friends, has now said to me, "Dad, I don't know if I want to stay here." Breaks my heart. So as you think about this, administrators, board of trustees, and other folks associated with the university, let's rethink what we're doing here, and let's see if we can look to find another way to hold our students accountable, hold them to the highest ideals, but also look to preserve and support fraternity and other social aspects of the life of the university. Because we know that alumni support for universities, which is a big part of what universities need in today's day and world, you know, today's day and age. Ohio State doesn't get $500 million a year because they had a great experience in their Econ 300 class. Let's face it. You know, when I went here, there was 25,000 students. How many do we have now? How many of them live on campus? How many activities? How many things are there for them to do? And I'm not even going to talk, like it was talked earlier, about what life is like out there in Greek Row. Oh my Lord, I was there this morning. I thought it was in a war zone. So again, I ask you, I urge you, as a avid supporter of this university and an alumni, to rethink your positions and look to encourage and hold accountable in a different fashion than what you're doing. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Shackle. Are there questions from the committee or comments about any of the speakers thus far?
I'd like to make a comment. First of all, I wish I had worn my Pike letters today. Then I guess I could have fit in with some of the speakers and some of the members. I, too, have heard a lot about this, and I spent 2 hours on a Sunday a couple weeks ago on a private Facebook thread just responding to same types of questions about this as well. And you know, I agree with some of the things you're saying here is that with Greek life, there's four Greeks on this board here right now. And I've been to alumni events, and I've always been amazed at how at the alumni events, it's usually former Greeks and the people that are writing the checks back to the university, for the most part, Jordan, Barsima, are Greeks. So the money does come back that way. I'm obviously a huge supporter of Greek life. And I guess these are things that we'll be talking about. We're very well aware of the neighborhood. We've had various discussions on that as well. It's this isn't a blind eye. We know what's going on in terms of the neighborhood. So, but from a Greek life perspective, heard a lot about it, answered a lot of phone calls lately, and we'll be, you know, definitely be talking about this. So thanks for coming out today.
Trustee Struthers.
Simply comment, I appreciate the strong, you know, passion and commitment that all the speakers presented. Something I think that we're well aware of, but to hear it from you directly with the passion and professionalism and perspective that you gave it was meaningful and something I think that we needed to hear. So thank you.
Okay, President Freeman.
Thank you. I'd like to just make a few comments on behalf of the university. First, I want to thank everybody who came to speak today and also those who we're going to hear from in the next committee meeting. We always welcome people who wish to speak to constructively provide feedback, concerns, and ideas. We listen carefully. And I'm actually pleased that what I heard today resonates so well with the values of the university, and there's so much common ground in terms of concern for students, belief in our Constitution, First Amendment, our shared governance system, and an appreciation for Greek life and a concern for all aspects of our community. And I sit here also wearing a number of hats, a parent who cares about a child who went through this, sending a student off to college and making sure that you know, you did what you could do to make sure that they were safe. President of the university, concerned about all members of our Husky community. I am also a former Greek. I was not in a letter organization as an undergraduate, but in veterinary school, I was a proud member of Omega Tau Sigma. And for those of you who can't put it together quickly, that's OATS. It's a joke for veterinarians who take care of horses, but it is a social and professional organization, and I do understand the value of Greek life. I want to take a moment and respond specifically to what I heard here today, share some of the university's ongoing concerns, and most importantly, express the university's willingness to continue to work with student organizations such as those in Greek life. The faculty and staff, including administrators at NIU, strive to create a safe and inclusive and fun environment that's conducive to learning and thriving during a student's time at NIU. To do this, we provide academic and well-being supports, and we set appropriate expectations and policies related to student conduct at both the individual and the organizational level. Our Greek letter chapters provide NIU students with important opportunities to seek memberships in organizations that are founded upon three principles: academic and scholastic excellence, service to the greater community, and bonding through brother and sisterhood. And we appreciate all three of those. We want our students to be socially connected while they're on campus and after they leave. We value these positive contributions to our university life, and as a result, we try to work closely with the Greek organizations to establish formal relationships and agreements that directly aid in those principles being upheld and that improve your experience while you're on campus. Those relationships and agreements come together every August when NIU requires each sorority and fraternity to participate in alcohol and substance abuse education, to be trained about NIU's off-campus social events policy and other expectations related to student conduct. Our chapter presidents, alumni advisors, and faculty advisors are required at that time to review and sign a relationship agreement with the university. In the event that a policy or relationship agreement is violated, NIU has an obligation to take corrective measures. Last semester, Student Affairs provided three different times for students to come and provide feedback on our policies, particularly the off-campus social events policy and its connection to conduct. As I understand it, no one attended those sessions. Regardless, last semester, Student Affairs also began collaborating with Student Association President Rachel Jacob to create a task force comprised of students and Student Affairs staff to look at our off-campus social events policy. Their first task force meeting is today. I look forward to their progress and their recommendations, and based on the testimony we've heard today, perhaps there's more opportunity for parents and alumni advisors to be part of that particular task force in their conversations. Within the past several months, we have been alerted to a number of events where members of Greek organizations knowingly and willingly participated in unsafe behaviors and violated the off-campus social events policy. And examples of this include events with drugs, common source alcohol, dangerous binge drinking games, lack of sober monitors to help identify if a student could be in trouble, lack of guest lists, and a failure to register events. This concerns us, not because the rules were broken, but because we care about your safety and your well-being. And it's troubling because some of the organizations involved were previously sanctioned for violations. I heard a lot today that resonated with the university's beliefs. What I'm not sure I heard was anybody acknowledging that these behaviors are concerning or owning up to mistakes. The choice to partake in these activities puts your educational goals at risk, and more importantly, puts your lives at risk. This is a university that has experienced the loss of students and knows firsthand the profound ways that life can change in an instant. And we're not alone in this. Universities across our nation grapple with similar issues. And this is what weighs on our hearts and minds as leaders with years of experience putting our students first. I ask that you consider this when you interact with our student affairs team or attack them in comments in the sections of the paper or on social media. Whether you choose to believe it or not, they are looking out for the best interest of our students and the communities to which they belong. and live. And as we went through the 214 commemorative events that they planned and executed and supported, I doubt that anybody really doesn't believe that that is their orientation. I value the experience and intentions of our student affairs team, and I also appreciate their openness to review our policies and procedures. I also want you to know that I do hear the concerns and fears that you've expressed today, that more stringent conduct penalties, such as multi-year suspensions, are too severe, ineffective, and deter you from wanting to work with the university, and that is certainly not our aim. There's room for improvement, especially when students are willing to be accountable for their choices and part of the larger dialogue that seeks solutions and common ground. So, in the same spirit of collaboration that's happening with our off-campus social events policy, I want to talk about what NIU wants to do and is willing to do to work with our Greek students. We want to build trust. Trust has to be earned and to be mutual. The fraternity and sorority life relationship statement that the chapter presidents and advisors sign indicates our expectation that each chapter will establish and maintain trusting relationships with all constituents, including NIU staff and administrators. We want and we acknowledge that we need to work with you to create a good environment for building trust so that we can work together on mutual goals, such as strengthening the Greek system so that it's healthy, thriving, lasting, and a fun community built on the three pillars of academics, service, and leadership. Working with all of our student organizations to have clear pathways to success, clear ways to utilize even more restorative justice techniques to make educational corrections when necessary, peer accountability and support. We don't want there to be fear that when one organization missteps, a whole community will suffer. There's an important dialogue that's happening. We've moved it forward here, and we're committed to moving it forward in a positive and constructive way that empowers our students and their organizations to be their best, academically and personally, because as we've heard this morning, that will allow NIU to be the best university that it can be. So again, thank you for coming and sharing your concerns. We've listened. I've heard a lot of common ground, and I look forward to working with you on solutions to achieve the goals we've all articulated this morning. Thank you.
I understand Trustee Barsima wishes to address the committee.
Thank you. First of all, thank you to all the students who came out today. It's awesome to see that you are involved in what's going on and that you care about what's going on. So thank you for being here. That you may or may not know, I am an SAE, and I don't have a daughter in ASA, but we have a very close family friend who is in ASA, and I heard her pain a few weeks ago, and it broke my heart. We care first and foremost about you as students. We care about your safety. There is accountability, and again, thank you to all the speakers who spoke today. I thought you did an awesome job, so thank you very much in expressing your views and the views that you represent. But there has to be shared accountability in what we're doing, because if we don't do what's right for your safety, then you'll be up in front of us with a different message. So there's a balance that we need to strike that is fair for all. Not everybody's going to like whatever the outcome is. There is no perfect solution here. Whatever comes of this effort that Dr. Freeman spoke of that we're going through to understand that we have the right processes in place, It may please some, it may anger others. So I'm just going to put it out there for you. There is no perfect process. But I want you to know that the Board of Trustees takes your concerns very seriously. We hear you. I heard the pain of a person I care a great deal about a few weeks ago, and this is something that we take very, very seriously. And again, thank you for being here today. Thank you for expressing your views and opinions. You have been heard, and we will go on together from here and work together on this issue. So, thank you.
Did you want to? Trustee.
Hello, everyone. I'm not sure if everyone knows me, but I am Giuseppe LaGioia. I am the student trustee here, also a member of the Greek community. Currently, I am a Phi Sigma Kappa. As you all, many of you know, I have been a student in the Greek life for the past 4 years. And first and foremost, thank you guys for coming. This has been something that we've all been talking about, and it's been going on in the community for years now, and we're finally making change on it. Making change here is showing up and talking to the board and expressing these concerns. So everyone showing up here wearing their letters today is a huge thing. As your student representative for this board, I can assure you that we will work towards making a policy where we come onto an understanding. From a university aspect, we want to make sure that you are all safe as you hear today, but also we want to make sure that everything is going smoothly and that we represent you first and foremost. So as we continue on with this process and going in the future, please keep showing up, please express your voices, and go on and move forward. Thank you.
What I want to add to this conversation, I, like many of my colleagues, was part of a Greek organization. When I was on campus, I was president of my chapter house, and it was a harrowing year of fearing the consequences of misbehavior and realizing that I could be held personally accountable. And as a trustee, I also think many of the members of this board also realized that they could be held responsible for activities that happen in your chapter homes, activities sponsored by your chapters. So I agree with much of what's been said. What I want to do is say, it sounds to me like in the next several weeks or so, there's going to be an opportunity for the individuals in this room to think carefully about what you can offer as corrective action to right the ship, so to speak, to move your chapter houses in the direction that will not result in the things that got them in trouble in the first place. That's going to be challenging. You're going to have to put things on paper. You're going to have to think creatively. You're going to have to push yourselves harder than you may think is warranted in the situation. You're going to have to spend some of your valuable time talking about these issues and soul searching about what's the essential purpose of the organizations that you belong to. I hope you will engage that activity and realize that the university administrators working with you are doing so in good faith. And that means really reaching a point, hopefully, where we can restore some continuity and peace in this relationship and bury the hatchet a little about some of the things that are concerning you about the process and the activities that brought you here today, because this takes some give and take. And so I hope you'll take that very seriously, the gesture that Dr. Freeman just described. And again, that you'll come back to us and you'll tell us what you think of the process and how things are going, because we are interested. With that, we're done with, I believe, the public comment related specifically to the Greek organizations. I do have one more speaker who's requested to speak to us at this committee, and that's Professor Virginia Naples. So I'll ask that Professor Naples step to the podium as well. And I'll ask if you could please just stay for the rest of the professor's remarks, because it would be disturbing to try to leave during them. Professor Naples.
Thank you very much. I appreciate the opportunity to speak to the group today. The topic that I'm talking about does not relate directly to what has been discussed previously, which we all take as a very serious issue we need to work to resolve, but it is related in at least a tangential manner. What I am asking to do is to request the Board of Trustees to enhance and increase the opportunities for students through the CHANCE program. And I think this was in NIU today. This is a celebratory picture of many of, I assume, of the CHANCE program members. And the article said this is the 50th year anniversary of the CHANCE program. And that also it is a unique program at NIU that other universities don't have. There are many successful graduates who participated in this program, and it offers an opportunity to students who might not have had the same opportunity without this availability to obtain a good quality degree and launch their careers in their futures. But to this date, CHANCE has only served undergraduate students. And therefore, I am requesting that the Board of Trustees expand the CHANCE program to the graduate students. Now, our spring enrollment was down 4.7% for the undergraduates, and this is a very sad issue that we all have to deal with. And I know there are lots of efforts trying to improve the situation, but the graduate enrollment was down even further. It was down 6.3% since last year. The graduate students not only benefit from getting advanced degrees from NIU, but they are also a critical component of both the teaching and the research mission. Without a sufficient number of graduate assistants, it makes it very difficult for students to have access to tutorial kinds of assistance, to additional sorts of access to learn and improve their understanding of course material. Graduate assistants are also critical for the research process for our faculty. They serve both as mentees and as collaborators, and as such are part of our main educational mission. This is a major concern on the part of most faculty. I, of course, hear faculty asking about salary increments and working conditions and teaching loads and all of these other things, but setting the financial concerns aside, the most serious concern they have is the decreasing number of graduate students. For example, in my department, we used to have over 80 graduate students, and we now have about 60. We still have as many majors, or close to as many majors, and we have a greater diversity of courses and needs for research opportunities for graduate students, and those also enhance the research opportunities for undergraduate students as well. NIU needs to demonstrate its commitment to building diversity and inclusion by increasing minority graduate student enrollment. And this is something that NIU can do as a leader on a national basis. To my knowledge, no other university has a program equivalent to a CHANCE program, and therefore there's just no opportunity for graduate students to participate in such a program. There was a previous application made to enhance the CHANCE program, and that was not funded. I'm hoping that will be redone. But one of the things that I think would assist that would be if the NIU community would provide the equivalent of some seed money to demonstrate the depth of commitment to improving the diversity on campus at the graduate level as well as the undergraduate level. And I usually don't ask the trustees to spend lots of additional money because I like to try to find more economical solutions. But in this case, I think this is a situation where the benefit to cost ratio is extremely high, and so I would ask that this be done. Enhancing CHANCE at both the undergraduates and graduate levels could place NIU in a leadership position and make us a role model for universities, not only in Illinois, but on a nationwide basis. And it is something that would generate a tremendous amount of positive publicity that would go along with our increased efforts at marketing and improving the knowledge of NIU so that we are no longer a best-kept secret, but we are a well-publicized secret, or no longer a secret. And in conjunction with a policy to end sexual harassment, abuse, and assault, as I had proposed earlier, and I sent the statement I read to the University Council, to our trustees. I would like, that's a proposal to do something equivalent to the Me Too movement, and that's one of the reasons I'm wearing black today, as I did at the University Council. I usually wear red and black to show university spirit. And I'm wearing black in support of all of the celebrities in Hollywood that attended various programs of awards to support the Me Too and the Time's Up kinds of movements. And I see that these things can work together to improve the campus climate. And both of these initiatives are a part from what other universities have done, and they can demonstrate what we can do to improve the total campus climate for all of our community members, staff, faculty, students, and other people that have an interest in NIU. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Professor. Are there questions for the speaker?
Yeah, I just have one comment on that. Our overall enrollment was down 4.3, not 4.7. And the reason some of this is because our enrollments coming in 15 and 16 were lower. So therefore, you're going to see it like that. And we'll talk about that more in the AASAP committee.
Okay, thank you.
I apologize for the incorrect decimal point.
Okay.
I always worry about questioning a doctor, as you are. But
that's the numbers I think are the right numbers. So
you may well be correct. Perhaps I'm a little dyslexic. I may have transposed the numbers. But it's still down, and I really want to see us improve it. And I think the proposal that I put forward, should you be willing to accept it, would go a long way toward improving our position of leadership among universities.
Thank you, Professor. The chairman of our board, Wheeler Coleman, has asked me to be recognized so he can make some comments in relation to the prior subject of the Greek organizations. Trustee Coleman.
So good morning, everybody. I would be remiss if I didn't say a few words to all the students that are here today about concerns that were raised. So I'm not a Greek member. I am a graduate of NIU. I would tell you I am a little disturbed by all the messages that I've received and all the comments that were made surrounding our Greek life, our process, our judge jury process that have been raised into issue today. One thing that I want to, there's two messages I have for the students is that we want you to continue to raise your concerns about anything that we're doing here at the university that you think we need to do better. We're not a perfect institution, and our attempt is continuous improvement upon everything that we do. And one way we can continue to get better is that you raise your hand and raise your concerns about things that we need to improve upon. We need to take a closer look at the process that we have in place today. I think you heard from Dr. Freeman that we will do exactly that. We need to take a closer look at the process that we have in place. And I'm not sure what kind of changes will come out of that, if any. But one thing that we will be certain to do is take a look at the process that we have in place. Secondly, students, you're precious. We need you, and we need you to succeed, and we need you to help your fellow students to succeed. We do not want any of our students' lives to be put in jeopardy. We don't want that on our watch or anybody's watch. And so if you're engaging in behavior that could jeopardize your fellow students or yourself, we're saying that's behavior that's unacceptable. Now, I will tell you the last thing that I would like to see, and I'm speaking personally here, the last thing I would like to see is a death spiral to any of the Greek organizations. But at the same time, I don't want any of our organizations to put fellow students at risk and possible risk of losing their lives. So we've got to have a balance here, right? And there's got to be accountability here. And one thing that we're going to promise is that we'll look at the process, but we need you to do your duty and make sure that you're not putting fellow students at risk, especially at risk of losing their lives. We don't want that. We've been through too much as a university, and we don't want that to happen again. I want to also encourage you to continue to come to our meetings, continue to raise your voice. Thank you.
Thank you. President Friedman has asked for a moment to address some of the comments by Professor Naples, I believe.
I first want to start out by thanking Dr. Naples for coming to talk to us. And I want to say that I think it's so important that she brought this proposal and a commitment to diversifying our graduate student population to the committee that deals with research and innovation, because it's well established that when we have different perspectives and different lived experiences informing research, innovation, leading our classrooms, better ideas result. Society sees better outcomes. And as a university, we are certainly committed to that. In terms of enrollment, one of the most important things that diversifying graduate student populations does is allow us to grow those students into future faculty and diversify our faculty so that all of our students have an opportunity to be taught by people with different lived experiences, to see people who look like themselves in leadership roles. And NIU is committed to these goals and ideals. We actually have a fair amount already going on. NIU is a leader in the Diversifying Illinois Initiative. The work of Dr. Janice Hamlet in the College of Liberal Arts and Sciences has a conference in February where we will exhibit this leadership and bring DFA scholars from around Illinois to NIU. We are actively pursuing federal funding, things like McNair Scholars Grants, to help us diversify our graduate student population and advance our ideals and commitment. And we're looking at anti-bias training for graduate admissions committees so that we make sure that people have a fair shot at getting into graduate school and aren't inadvertently exposed to the implicit biases of those evaluating their applications. So I'd love to ask Dr. Naples to bring the idea she presented here today to work with others on campus who are equally committed to the goal of diversifying both our graduate student population and our faculty, and let's move forward together.
Thank you very much, President Friedman. So this is a warning that if you stay a little longer, you'll have to hear Matt Streb, our board liaison, talk about state relations. Unless you leave, which we certainly don't want you to, but this is your chance.
When I was in the classroom, Trustee Butler, when I was in the classroom, my students would have appreciated that opportunity. Yep.
Thank you.
So, Trustee Butler, this is not a break, though, so I'd encourage us to stay on track and keep moving here. I'm going to be very brief. I've put most of you know, you can read my written report. The biggest thing that's happened since my written report was submitted was obviously the governor put forward his budget address yesterday. I just wanted to give you a very quick overview of where we stand according to that. And I want to be very clear that what the governor proposed yesterday is the first step in a long process, and what will come out ultimately could be very different. So we have a budget proposal that would put us flat from FY18. That would be roughly $82 million from the state of Illinois. That is under the IBHE proposal, which was to increase from FY18 by 1.9%. It's also well under what the president's pushed, which was to return us back to our FY15 budget numbers. The governor also, in his address, is proposing to hold MAP funding flat. That is different from the IBHE recommendation of $100 million of an increase to MAP. But there's a flip on the other side where the governor has now asked for $100 million to be put for deferred maintenance, and IBHE only suggested $20 million. The big concern, well, there's many concerns that the university has, certainly no doubt, but one of the major concerns we have is that the governor is trying to move pension and health care costs completely on the backs of the institutions. Over a four-year period of time, according to what the governor proposed yesterday, we would be required to pick up all pension and health care costs. He said that he's made it about a 25% per year. The first year would be a one-to-one split. So essentially what that means is the state would be essentially giving us a little bit extra appropriation so we could cover the pension and health care costs. What that looks like going forward, though, is unclear. And that is something that the presidents are very, very concerned about. Again, I want to be very clear, this is the first, you know, offer, so to speak. Actually, it's not even the first offer. IBHE has put forward a proposal. The presidents have put forward proposals. This will be discussed a bunch over the next several weeks. President Freeman will be in Springfield next week doing our Senate appropriations testimony. I'm hopeful that a budget will be passed. If you talk to people in Springfield, they tell you that they expect a budget to be passed. But if you also look at the reactions yesterday to the governor's speech from both sides of the party, it's very easy to say we want a budget to pass. We understand that the problems of not having a budget pass. Whether that actually happens is anybody's guess, to be quite blunt. There's still all sorts of options on the table. We could get what the governor proposed. We could get slightly more than the governor proposed. We're not going to get what the president has proposed. I can guarantee you that. We could get a half-year budget. We could get no budget. We could get a full budget. So everything's very still up in the air. It'll be a little clearer, I think, once the primaries are over in March. Remember, there's a competitive primary right now. That will help, I think, make things a little bit clearer. But that's essentially where we are right now on the state budget proposal. So I'm happy to answer any questions you have now, or certainly if you have questions offline, I'm happy to answer those as well.
Trustee Wasowitz.
So, man, I'm kind of curious. So pension and health care costs, what is that in terms of dollars? Do you have any idea off the top of your head?
I don't have an actual number. That the governor put, I think, $105 million in pension, I think it was, for all state institutions. So I don't know what our share of that would be. But it would be a significant amount of money.
Okay. We've
Eric, Trustee Wasowitz, Sarah McGill said that she could get that information for you.
Okay, all right.
We've calculated that in the past. I know as an important discussion point in understanding the total amount of state investment in the higher education institutions. So I know that it's actually very interesting information. So
we could just put note in our audit. We take a look at last year, so we can find that pretty quickly. It's significant, though.
Yeah, it should be easy to get. I just don't have it off the top of my head.
So I'm going to inform the committee now that we're going to assume that you will take up the information items 7B and 7C on your own time and report your questions and concerns to the university leadership on those items. And I'm going to move now to recognize our committee liaison, Dr. Jerry Blasey, our Vice President for Research and Innovation Partnerships, who's going to discuss University Report 7D.
Thank you, Trustee Butler. After you your earlier theft of my thunder and Professor Thu's theft of my thunder and the previous talks. I'm just hoping for a low rumble in the distance. Okay, so as President Freeman indicated, I'll be addressing specific aspects of the presidential goal to increase capacity for research, innovation, and regional engagement. I will focus on research, but it's important to keep in mind that those three are linked very closely, and they have impact on one another. And in particular, I'll focus on research cluster strategies to promote the intensity of scholarship at the university. A reminder, the goals, specific goals, are to initiate at least one research cluster in fiscal year 19 and fiscal 20. And by research, as always, I ask you to stipulate that I mean research, scholarship, and artistry. And also to have two doctoral programs, to add additional doctoral programs to the to our curriculum, and you'll be hearing about one of those later today. But I also want to address the board's request for the vision and strategy, which we discussed at the last meeting. And at that meeting, we were requested to provide a specific goal and metrics for tracking the increase in research intensity. These will focus on the research clusters because they're a main mechanism for increasing research intensity. Can we get that on full view? So it's cutting out. Okay, there, thank you. So last meeting we discussed the strategic actions to build scholarship in the areas that underpin our vision, and that vision we presented was preparing Northern Illinois and the nation for a century of change. And the pillars, or the emphases under there, were responding to a changing climate, preparing for changing demographics, leading the evolution of technology, and interpreting our changing world. Now, we didn't pull these out of thin air. I had many discussions with many departments, many researchers, and these speak to our strengths, speak to societal needs, and also we believe that these will engage our students. And as you'll see at the end of my talk, that student engagement is crucial for the health of the university. Behind these, I listed some strategic, or I'm sorry, tactical actions to promote our research, and these were new doctoral degrees, initiate research and scholarship clusters, leverage partnerships, improve infrastructure, and there I mean equipment, stipends, innovation resources, and enhance the culture of scholarship. And by that I mean reducing impediments, units of the university, taking a more service-based orientation, faculty incentives, and providing faculty mentorship. Now, the first two, new doctoral degrees and initiate research and scholarship clusters, as I mentioned earlier, are presidential goals. A new doctoral program is already in the works, and we'll hear about it later today. So the goal, the goal I will put forth is a 25% increase in scholarship. Now, that is not thunderous, but it's reasonable given our current financial situation and the resources we have to bring to bear on increasing scholarship. I'd like to think of this in terms of a basic unit of growth, and to get that basic unit of growth, I use the standard, but incomplete in the sense that it doesn't apply to all disciplines, the proxy of externally funded research. So in FY 2017, we had 7 faculty who attracted external funds for research, and on average, they each attracted about $135,000 per given year. So it's just a simple calculation. It's more of a plausibility argument that for us to see a 5% increase in research activity as measured by external grants, we need to create or revitalize an initiative with 4 additional research active faculty. Oh, I'm sorry. I can't wander. Okay, so I'll try to stay put. This could be, this to reach the 25% goal, then we need 5 new initiatives, which can be achieved by a combination of new degrees or centers of scholarship. Now, external funding is just one proxy for, or one form of measurement. These initiatives should be distributed across the university and tracked with appropriate metrics. So for instance, if you're an English professor or a historian, we would track it most likely with books or monographs. So here's a very successful example. Comes from the STEM fields, which is our accelerator cluster, and it's a shared initiative with Fermilab to enhance our collaboration and accelerator science with joint collaborations and professorships. Now, this is actually speaks to one of the two of the tactics in the sense that it's a cluster, but it also really leverages a partnership with a local institution. Our investment is about $450K per year over 5 years, which is matched by Fermilab. So we really get a big bang for our buck. We've recruited 2 senior faculty, and now are recruiting 2 junior positions. Since 2015, the 2 individuals have already brought in a little over $2 million in external grants from NSF and DOE. And they currently engage 18 graduate students. Now, these 2 faculty were added to 2 that we already had on staff in this area. We can now claim that we have one of the largest university groups in accelerator science in the nation. We're right up there with MIT, with Michigan, with Caltech. And it's because we're able to leverage our partnership. So our metrics should also reflect the impacts of scholarships. So I'm looking for a set of metrics that not only measure our increase in research productivity, artistry, and scholarship, but also directly speak to what I take to be the 4 main impacts of scholarship, and they're listed here: enhanced peer and public reputation, faculty recruitment and retention, student, both undergraduate and graduate, recruitment and retention, and donor and alumni interest in activity. So these, to me, are good bins for the impact of scholarship on the university as a whole. And the metrics should somehow speak to that as well. And the metrics, the highest level metrics I think are helpful in this regard are publications, citations, and books, as sort of as a group of metrics, grant activity from the main agencies for us are Department of Energy, National Science Foundation, National Institutes of Health, National Endowment for the Arts, and the Department of Defense. And then also, I think a very important measure is student engagement in research. Next slide, please. So here's just a peek at what these metrics look like. I've taken these from Academic Analytics, which is known to be incomplete. It underreports, but it does let you get a good sense of trends and allows you to compare to other universities and departments at other universities. First thing I'll note, these are time plots over a decade of the number of books, the number of publications, and the number of citations related to our publications and books. Professor Fu is absolutely correct, despite our difficult financial situation, productivity is held pretty constant. And that's even in light of slightly declining faculty numbers. So on average, the university publishes about 40 books per year, a little over 600 to 700 publications, peer-reviewed journals, and citations normally are around 5,000.
Got to get you on.
Normally on 5,000. There's a spike there in 2012 because of a particularly impactful publication by some of our faculty. But normally, the citations are around 5,000. Next slide, please. So the other metric, the second type of metric would be research grant activity. It averages about $10 million a year. I would like to see it get up to $12.5 or $13 million a year as our goal. Here, the focus is just on externally funded basic research. Our overall portfolio is $30 million a year, but that includes instruction and public service. Notice I have not put a time scale on this plot. That's very intentional. Both the magnitude of the increase in scholarship and the time it takes to do it depends entirely on our ability to invest. And the third metric I would suggest that the board, next slide please. The third metric that I suggest the board would track is associated with student engagement. And why is that important? Why is that impactful? Well, it's because the number one thing most students care about is academic reputation. This is some data I took from the April 2016 Lippman-Hearn survey of students, and it's the decision rank of program strength and academic reputation that students consider when they join a university. And freshman prospects, it's the number one. For transfer students, it's number two, but they focus a bit more on the program they're joining. And for graduates, current undergraduates and current graduates, it's in the top four for all of them. It is the single most important aspect when we're recruiting and retaining students. Engagement in research and scholarship is a very high impact practice. Next slide, please. Our current first-year retention rate is 73%. If you look at the honor student cohort, which are closely linked with scholarship, it goes up to 93%. And if you look at our research rookie program, it's 99%. Now, the statistics are small, 87, but it's still a significant increase in retention. So we'll develop a metric around that participation and engagement as associated with research, and this shows the connectivity to the other goals because the engagement is really important for the university's health. If you translate those retained students into tuition, you're getting into many millions of dollars. Next slide, please. Okay, so I'll just close. I believe we've established a forward-looking vision focused on societal needs and student interest. I'm setting a modest goal of 25% growth, but I'll remind you, the board, that the magnitude and time scale goes with resources. The performance will be measured at the highest level with publications, citations, and books. That really covers all of the disciplines. Grants, which is canted towards the STEM disciplines, and student involvement, which covers all of the disciplines. And I just want to mention that on those other tactical items, work continues on infrastructure and the impediments issues for all three types of scholarship. So that's my presentation. I'm happy to take talks or questions.
Questions from the committee? Trustee Barcino.
Thank you, Jerry, for that. That's outstanding. If we could go back to slide six, I appreciate the relative numbers that you have there.
This is the books and citations.
Yeah, it's on books and citations and publications.
Yeah, that's
it. But how do we rank against our peer institutions? Because without that context, I don't know if that's a good number or a bad number.
They are representative numbers for a regional public school without a medical school, regional public university without a medical school. Our productivity is right in line on average. In some departments, it's off the charts.
Off the chart in a good way.
Well, it's amongst the highest percentile. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I only talk about good things up
okay.
here anyway.
Political science and our book production, Trustee Barcino, I'll just point that out there.
Yeah, yeah. I've seen that up on somebody's wall. So my takeaway from this is student engagement is really critical. And the more we get our students engaged in different activities on campus, be it research, scholarship, whatever it might be, the greater retention and so forth. And honors clearly has a big role to play in that. Research rookies, you know, which is a part of that, has a big role. But are we looking at what other things we can do to get students involved, to expand the honors program, to expand research rookies or programs like research rookies?
I'm going to defer to the president on that.
I'll keep my answer short because this is one where I could actually talk forever. But universities know, and sort of the academic term for this type of connecting activity is a high impact practice. Research and engagement in research and scholarship is a very important one because it has the largest impact among all the high impact practices. But the other ones include things like service learning and community service, study abroad, internships or job shadowing opportunities. And interestingly, our own data, not just national data, shows that with each high impact practice that a student engages in after two, their success, their GPA, their time to graduation, all the variables we want to track get better. We also noticed that one of the glaring differences between our students from underserved populations and those from more privileged backgrounds, where we have what we call an equity gap in graduation rates and retention, one of the glaring differences is the lack of participation in high impact practices in general and research in particular in the group of students, the cohort who tend to come from more underserved backgrounds. And we've shown with some of our programs on campus that when you offer research opportunities, engagement opportunities, and high impact practices to those students, you start to close that gap in retention and persistence in a very meaningful way. And in fact, that our desire to do that is reflected in the presidential goals. So we have some excellent examples of impact that probably this is not the venue to share with you, but I very much appreciate the question, and it's something that we think about every day, and it's something that I believe we use when we define the value proposition of NIU that we've spoken about a number of times this morning.
Those last few slides are great data that we need to keep in front of us because it's eye-opening.
It absolutely is. And you know, here you could actually argue in some of the data Jerry showed that there might be some selection bias, but we have other data sets that really suggest it is an intervention that can make a difference as you move forward.
So the selection bias is actually positive because we're attracting students that are interested in these areas. So I would say it's slightly different. Not only is creation of knowledge just the right thing to do, it's absolutely crucial to our ability to recruit and retain. That's how I would say it in a sentence.
Well, I would just say I've been lucky enough to participate in a couple of research rookie projects as a mentor. And my experience as a mentor was great. But the outcome, that I saw that they resulted in, you know, we've got the Husky Student Food Pantry on campus is in a lot of ways the result of a research rookie project. So it's that one particular program is a terrific program, and I'd love to see us blow that up in a good way, expand it. Yeah.
So I wanted to make one more comment. I really didn't address how research impacts our relationships with donors and alumni, and that's because that's underway. Vice President Squires and I are now currently trying to develop a strategy to move this research excellence into the realm of alumni relations and donor activity. So you'll be hearing more about that in the future.
Try to encapsulate everything I want to say before this committee is concluded in these comments and what I think is a question. First of all, this committee carried a lot of water this morning for the rest of the committee, so I hope that you're not holding it against me personally that we've gone way over time. Secondly, I'm a little bit concerned about the term research public. And I want to just make sure that I understand that that's a concept that may be relevant to this kind of measurement, but it's not a determining concept or label No, that's relevant to our university.
It's really a reflection of size.
Right.
Right.
But the word regional concerns me always when we're talking about where Northern fits within the national spectrum, because we've got legislators in Springfield, obviously, who just think because there's a direction in our name that we're a regional university, and that puts us in a different classification on a number of different levels, which concerns me. And obviously what I would like us to say is, not that I'm imposing a language standard here, but I would like to keep us, I'd like to remind us always that we are a doctoral granting, high research classified research university, which is really important that we keep hold of that identity. I think third, I would like us to think about measuring in some manner how research relates to curriculum. And there may be a ready system for looking at that, but I know there's a difference between when a faculty member comes onto the faculty and they're asked to teach a course that's existed in the curriculum for years, and they do that because they're an expert in that discipline. That's different than when a faculty member develops a course or even a line of curriculum or program that's related to their research, which I think is really significant in terms of academic programming and that sort of second rank of the students who are sophomores and juniors in terms of what they look at that's important in terms of the program they're actually selecting. And then fourth, as a humanist, I'm always concerned about citation indexes, just because they work better for social scientists than they do for humanists, or at least that used to be the case. And so I wonder, as we continue to measure these progress and put value on the work that we're doing, if we can't really dig deep into how humanists measure research productivity, and that may be different than how social scientists do. And then finally, I just want to remind everybody that this report comes after the vision itself was presented, and it was in response to a desire for a deeper dive into the way that you and the president were viewing the return on investment. But I don't think there's any doubt at this point that this board is committed to this vision and this strategy. And we want you to proceed. Yeah.
Thank you.
And that's all I have to say. Okay. So, is there any other matters to come before the committee? Seeing none, then our next meeting date corresponds with all the other committee next meeting dates. It'll be disclosed at some point in the day. So then, may I ask for a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
There's a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
There's a second. All those in favor of adjournment?
Aye.
Any opposition? Didn't expect there to be. The meeting's adjourned. Thank you, everybody, for your patience and your willingness to sit through this lengthy but important meeting.